A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Football Ramble Preview Show, sponsored by Bet365. My name is Marcus Speller, and Luke Moore's here.
All right.
Jim Campbell's here.
Hello.
And everyone's favourite chap, it's Pete Donaldson.
What's going on, everybody?
I'll tell you what's going on. It's football time, baby. It's football time. And England are in the World Cup final.
Oh, is it the under-17s?
The under-17s. Oh, is it a taste of what's to come, Jim?
100% it is. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yes, Jim's on board.
Because it hasn't happened yet. Yeah, I want to make that very clear.
That's why you were out of breath in the intro.
I think so.
You're that excited.
Yeah.
Marcus doesn't put things that he knows we won't let him talk about in the running order.
Yeah, he surprises, didn't he?
And
they just puts them in there anyway.
Yeah. What's wrong with that?
Nothing.
Yeah.
How many of the games have you seen?
England.
Who's your favourite player?
The guy who scored the hat-trick.
The guy off the advert.
He looks so pleased about the. He looks so pleased about scoring.
Oh, Brewster.
Oh.
Yeah.
Brewster's millions.
Brewster's got his millions. Himself. Ryan Brewster. It was funny. He said that his father said, sorry, that he's been messaging his son throughout the tournament because he scored a hat-trick against the US in the quarterfinal and then obviously against Brazil in the semifinal. And his dad said, I messaged him saying, but this was before the quarterfinal, it's about time you turned up to the party. Big games require big players. Cheers, Dad.
Wow. Yeah. Well, that's good motivation. That sort of level of tennis dad sort of horror is exactly what we might need to get this kid on the plane for the big one.
But, Jim, maybe we should get...
The plane starts now.
Maybe we should get the senior players' dads to do that to them as well.
Yes.
So, imagine, the whole coaching staff is just everyone's dad.
Yeah.
Like the bench at every game, just the dads screaming at their players.
Get the dads there.
So what we're saying is when everyone's talking about when everyone's talking about not sort of forcing young kids to play football and win and scream from the sidelines, what we're saying is we need more of that.
I think so.
Yeah.
Because they're used to that from a young age and when they get to the big stage, and it should be the dads and guardians or the dags as I would call them.
Yeah. Let's legitimise it and make it professional.
Because you do often see Jordan Henderson sort of looking around for his old man. What was I supposed to do there?
Who were those old men?
Harry the Sasquatch.
Yeah.
They're the dags.
Mm. Yeah, I heard it the first time.
Yeah, I liked it. The dags, ladies and gentlemen, they're coming to Russia. So, yes, England are there. What, youth tournaments galore is what
Marcus, we're not talking about this.
All right,
talk
all right then. Let's talk about the Carabao Cup, a.k.a. the big one that happened this week. What a win for West Ham at Wembley.
I was about to say, a.k.a. the we didn't want to win it anyway Cup.
Much applies to everyone other than the team that does win it.
Yeah, I know, right? Yeah, yeah.
So we'll give it 60 minutes, and if it's not happening, we're giving up. Tools.
No one in the top flight wants to win it unless they do win it, at which point it becomes great to pick up a trophy in February because it really gives you impetus for the running.
Yeah, and it also, it turns the community chest into a trophy as well, doesn't it? As we know.
Yeah, it does. It does.
Community chest.
But I wouldn't seek to denigrate any cup competition, Marcus, as you well know.
Jose Mourinho said that the Carabao Cup is a third of a hat-trick,
Yeah. So, a third of a treble.
Yeah, that's what. Yeah, hat-trick or treble. Treble. Yeah,
hat-trick is something quite different.
It is a little bit different.
Yeah, and
I'm just trying to steer it back to Brewster.
600 shows in, I expect you to know that. But yeah. The game you're obviously referring to is Spurs 2-0 up and cruising last night, but were able to be pegged back by basically the old West Ham job saver, wasn't it? There you go, Bilic. Yeah. Do you another favour there?
It's amazing, isn't it? He has to get within two games and then he really wakes up. How long can he keep this sort of yo-yoing style up?
But Jim, what I think is amazing is how it so often coincides with the game against Spurs, which they then win. I can't sack him now.
But I think the West Ham players, according to the stats, and Bilic admitted this, that his players haven't been running that much during games, which is a problem.
Yeah. Which is an astonishing admission for a professional football coach.
It's one down from not kicking enough.
Yeah.
But I think the stats were there, so Bilic, he had nowhere to hide, even though some people hate stats, of course. But they do sometimes paint a picture. Mm. But I think the players looked round and thought, we're taking it easy, really. We're getting off... We want this man still in the job. So we've got two games to save him. Well, I'll tell you what, we'll go out there, we'll keep him on for another couple of months, and we'll cruise through till Christmas.
I honestly think most West Ham fans would take having a really underwhelming season in which you occasionally mug off Spurs.
That's what they do
completely
get.
Completely happy with.
That's exactly what they do to every day. But it's almost as well, like with the running stats, like the West Ham fans, the West Ham players, sorry, have thought, well, I'm pretty sure the chairman can't sack us.
Yeah.
So if we don't want to run, we're not going to. We're not going to.
I know. Well, put it this way. The first Spurs goal, Sissoko outrun them all right down the middle of the pitch and just started home. And I thought, they really don't want Bilic to stay, do they, those
part
players?
Of like the part of like the Thames barrier to make it more cockney.
Like the claret and blue sea.
Yeah.
Let an errant seal in.
Or crocodiles, we learnt the other day.
Oh, yes.
What, in the Thames?
Yeah, we talked about it on the Better the Weaker thing, which we'll come on to a bit later on. Someone mentioned a crocodile in the Thames.
And I couldn't see the reference.
No, I went and looked it up and apparently there was one spotted.
Spotted. Yeah. Just carrier bag.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, it might have been, yeah.
I don't think that's true.
Well,
Marcus.
Is this anything to do with Jimmy Nail being spotted at Newcastle?
I don't think so.
With Sting.
Crocodile. Yeah. There was talk, keeping it on the Essex theme. Do you guys remember 5 or 6 years ago, there was a lion spotted in a field in Essex?
Yeah, the Essex lion. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, and it became big. And it turned out to be a stuffed lion.
Yeah, amazing.
Yeah,
there was a vogue for mums buying big stuffed lions from like Primark.
By mums, do you mean your mum?
No, my mum never got involved in the big lion on the mat kind of thing. I don't know, it's very kind of 80s thing to do.
I can hear the disappointment, that's what that's really about.
I want to ride a lion around the house.
If I take it back to, I always imagine you in that way. Going back to the game, I found it fascinating the chat, the different opinion about Pochettino's attitude towards the Carabao Cup. And the context of this, I think, is the way he treated the cup competitions at Southampton. He was quite sort of derisory about them, and we've talked about that, so I won't go into that again. But what's interesting to me is this is clearly a concerted effort by Pochettino to almost re-serious Spurs and say, look, we are this good Premier League team, but we've really been also ran traditionally in the Premier League. I know they've come a lot closer more recently. But if we want to move into this new era, be this established Champions League club and start winning things and with our new stadium and all the rest of it, there has to almost be a culture shift around the club where they do say things like, well, the Carabao Cup probably isn't really going to be too much either way to us because we want to be this much bigger club. So I do understand. But the flip side to that is what we talked about just a second ago, which is for Spurs to win the Carabao Cup, say, in February, which I think is when the final is, if they're still having a Premier League push at that point, it could be a real confidence boost for them. So I could sort of see both sides of it. Do you understand what I mean?
Yeah. But also it's a trophy in the cabinet, which is demonstrable proof that this is working, that they are starting to establish themselves as a club that wins trophies.
You know? And Mourinho has used it before as a good platform,
and
hasn't
also, as well, if they get to the final, it would just be like playing at home and they'll think this is great. Well,
genuinely, it would be a huge advantage.
I know that sounds a bit of a churlish point, and it is, but there is a modicum of truth in there, I think. But look, 2-0 up against a team who are your rivals, they don't want to lose that 3-2. It's as simple as that.
You couldn't
have envisaged at half time West Ham coming back into that game. You had an amazing night, really, just scoring those two goals, and they came out fighting. And Mark Noble said something interesting in an interview after the game, saying that the players, if players are not behind the manager, then it comes out in the press.
Yeah.
And he's right.
We haven't
really heard anything like that in the press, or I have certainly haven't.
Well, the only thing we've heard of West Ham is the owners. They're always always briefing.
But what I would say is that even the press are they quite like Bilic, because we remember him as a decent footballer, and he seems like a decent bloke, and he's pretty good at giving interviews. So I think there's a lot more goodwill towards an underperforming manager when you're Slaven Bilic compared to when
Redknapp,
you're Redknapp.
Redknapp gets it as well.
Or would he be, as Richard Keyes tweeted the other day, another foreign failure in the Premier League?
Speaking of Redknapp,
the British ones are so successful in the Premier League.
Redknapp was in the press today saying that the fact that QPR have been fined quite heavily for financial fair play under his era at QPR was a witch hunt against QPR. I think the rules were exactly the same for everyone.
Wow. I love the fact that club, their finances have been scrutinised for a good few years. Yeah. The moment Redknapp takes the job, right, we got him.
Yeah. Wasn't it? Speaking of Noble, who we mentioned very briefly.
Is he Noble, Pete?
Is he Noble? We threw his shirt into the, I think it was him who threw his shirt into the crowd.
Oh, yeah, and a fan.
And a fan sort of just absolutely stacked it trying to grab it, and he clearly clocked it but pretended he didn't see it or had anything to do with it.
Right.
That's quite like
a bit different with
not doing me. It
was a bit different with Crystal Palace, wasn't it? The shirt was thrown back at the player. Yeah.
But if you lose four, I mean, look, if you lose 4-1 away to a lower league opposition team, and I understand why you would want to go over with the shirt and say, look, thanks very much for coming. Mm. Sorry we were so rubbish, here's the shirt. That's different between throwing it into the crowd, going, oh, look at me, everyone, I'm Hulk Hogan. You know what I mean? It's different.
Look at me, everyone, I'm Hulk Hogan.
I think the way that it was done was more indicative to why he got the reaction he did.
Right? Probably mentioned for Hulk Hogan. Then.
But it was a great turnaround for West Ham. And clearly, Pochettino didn't want extra time.
No.
Big time, he did not want that.
But he didn't want to lose 3-2 after being 2-0.
Of course he didn't, absolutely not. Yeah. And you wouldn't want to do that against anyone, let alone a local rival. But West Ham have got another winnable game this weekend.
Against Crystal Palace. Do they need to star Adrian in goal instead of Joe Hart? Is that the key here?
I think Adrian's quite a good keeper.
He is a decent keeper. And Joe Hart's not having a very good time at the moment.
No, this is game two of Bilic's two games to save his job, isn't it? Which obviously he's doing very well so far.
Unless it's a friendly.
Yeah, but you can imagine after the game, Bilic is thinking, he goes up to David Gold and Sullivan and thinks, all right, well, you know, that's one down, you know, one to go. Yeah. And they go, two games starting from now.
Yeah.
two league games, not League Cup.
Yeah,
but DG.
Quite.
You're always two games. Oh, just take that as red.
Yeah.
You're always two games away from
the sack.
DG.
Yeah. I mean, Palace are smashable at the moment, aren't they? Is that what they're going to be looking to do?
Well, against Bristol City, very, very disappointing. And Hodgson gave some of his squad a chance to impress, really. He rested 10 players that played against Newcastle the previous Premier League game. So there was a lot of people who got shelved. And Hodgson, he said, oh, well, look, I take the responsibility for making so many changes. But he was very disappointed that some of those players just didn't take their chance. And so he should be, because four goals to concede against Bristol City. I mean, Bristol City aren't a bad side, but come on.
Yeah, it's not what you would have wanted, because you want those players to be pushing for a place.
Especially with, 1-0 up and they think, here you go.
And Palace obviously narrowly lost to Newcastle last weekend. It was a late goal, wasn't it?
Yeah, very.
And so they are showing signs now after they had that good win before that as well. So it's not, I mean, you know, this is not an easy winnable. I say it's a winnable game. It's not an easy to win game for West Ham, because you think Hodgson would have them quite well organised, quite hard working, and the rest of it. And we've just established that West Ham aren't really a very hard working team.
Indeed, yeah. But it's the time.
Palace do seem very kind of. They seem to put a lot of pressure upon people like Townsend to create stuff, and it is. It is a little worrying that they've only got a couple of players that are real ball playing footballers up top.
Well, they're still missing Benteke, aren't they?
Yeah.
Because as soon as you get Benteke up there, the likes of Townsend and Zahar can play off him, you know, and you've got a bit more balance. And
well, in theory, but we didn't see that work for most of the season. It looked a lot better with Zahar and Townsend doing that job themselves. So yeah, I wonder if Hodgson would be tempted to stick with that.
Well, West Ham are 9-4 with Bet365 to pick up a win at Selhurst Park this weekend. So £10 returns £32.50, including a stake. But I think, I actually think Crystal Palace will win. And Palace, of course, have had that one win this season against a big scalp like Chelsea at Selhurst Park.
They can beat London teams this season.
There you go.
Park.
So you know,
themselves.
Despite what I've just said there, I fancy Palace to win it.
There we are. Fancy Palace.
I thought that match was at the Bridge, but I'm mistaken.
No, you are mistaken.
What, West Ham versus Palace is at the Bridge? A strange one, but yeah. Spurs are playing at Wembley these days.
It's knocked everything out of sync.
Indeed, yeah. But they're away to Manchester United.
They are indeed.
How do you think, Marcus, that Jose Mourinho is going to approach this game?
That is a question, isn't it?
Because I took the back and hit them on the break.
The question is a pertinent one, I think, because Jamie Carragher made a really interesting point a couple of weeks ago where he said, we know that, and I understand this is Mourinho's side away to good teams, away from home. And I understand this game is at Old Trafford. But he said that if you're going to approach those sort of games away from home, and he listed the last however many results, I think it's the last 9 results away from home against big teams. And United just scored 2 goals.
Really?
They'd only scored 2 goals. They got draws and stuff here and there. And he was saying the amount of good teams around the Premier League now, you're giving up so many points not trying to win those games.
Well, if either side lose, both sides are on 20 points, 5 behind Manchester City. If either side lose, Manchester City are playing West Brom. Now, despite Pulis's party pooping capers, you would very much fancy Manchester City in the form they're in to win that. Either side loses that game.
They lose ground.
I mean, obviously, hypothetically speaking, but they could be eight points behind Man City already. So neither side can afford to lose this. A point It depends the circumstances, of course.
Which goes back to my original question, Marcus. How do you think Mourinho is going to approach it?
Well, I think he will go. He has to go and win it. You can't. It would show a distinct lack of ambition. This is Manchester United.
He's
they are
not
going
a pragmatic man, Marcus.
I think he is a very pragmatic man.
Really?
And I think he can't. And he can't. And he also, you can only afford to do those sort of away from home spoiling tactics if you win the games you're supposed to win.
Yeah.
And last time out, they didn't win. Well, they were beaten by Huddersfield.
The point you made as well a little while ago, Luke, is a fair one though, which is Mourinho. He steps back and looks at the bigger picture, doesn't he? He looks at points he'll get elsewhere. So I think he will still be quite pragmatic against this. I don't think he's going to change up his sort of tactics against the bigger team. And he's still probably going to try and spoil this and just sort of like, you know, blunt Spurs as much as possible.
I love that he just doesn't care.
It's funny, isn't it?
He just does not
But also,
care.
With the bravado of someone who is sort of this great entertainer. Mm. It's the barefaced cheek of it that's so enjoyable.
And one thing I've noticed as well, and admittedly it's only on Twitter, which maybe not that informative, is the idea that Ander Herrera, who was their best midfield player last season, I think, is now coming in for like quite a lot of stick from Man United fans. His record this season when he's played has not been great, and people are sort of asking what he does and all the rest of it, which I find surprising because I think he's a really good player overall.
Mourinho was very unhappy with his Herrera's comments after the Huddersfield game, where he said, we did lack passion and so on. And Mourinho's like, hang on, that's my line, all right? I can say that, kind of thing. But Manchester United, they cannot just... I mean, obviously under Mourinho they can, but they surely cannot play for a point or try and nick something at home to Spurs. And I think Mourinho, he can set teams up better. He might well go for a 1-0 win, but I think he'll still go for that win. I don't think this is going to be like Liverpool.
Yeah.
You know, I remember when his Chelsea side went away to Manchester City and won 1-0, and it was a brilliant game. And Chelsea were great that day, and Mourinho tactically set them up superbly. I think Ivanovic got the goal, and they might have won 2-0 on the night, but they got their 1-0 win. So he can set a team to set up a team to win 1-0 without it being too dreary. And I think that's what he'll probably do, because Spurs have got an awful lot of quality, as we know, and are away from home this season. They've been absolutely brilliant.
I just think of Manchester United. They have a set of players that are good for 3 months, and they just take the rest of the season off. Like people like, I don't know, Martial or Mkhitaryan back in the day. Like they have these kind of periods where they're the next big thing. And then for the rest of the season, everyone's gone, well, where's that performance gone?
Well, Jesse Lingard's a bit patchy.
Lingard's
he scored two great goals against Swansea. Mm. But
he also started the game against Huddersfield without beating him.
Yeah.
But is it a problem like intensity or something on the training ground? I can't understand why these players kind of just drop off their form, drops off a cliff.
Pete, we learned on the Continent yesterday, which obviously is out now, and you would have heard it about... Jonathan Wilson talking quite a lot about
in the North East seat.
He was in the North East seat. Yeah, I enjoyed it.
Sunderland fan. Yeah, outrageous.
He's every bit as dreary as you about the North East.
Don't say that about Jonathan.
To be fair,
when you say that about a man like Jonathan Wilson, he was talking about how Mourinho. The reason he only lasts a short amount of time is because he just poisons every little bit of the club and the players and everything, and all of a sudden it just all catches up with him.
Yeah.
Well, so it will be fascinating to see how. If what you're saying there, like because he's sort of shown with someone like a player like Luke Shaw, he's not backwards and coming forward about criticising them publicly.
Yeah.
So if he continues to do that, and what you're alluding to about these players' form maybe not being consistent enough, and it happened with Lindelof, who was a player he signed, who made an error in that game against Huddersfield, didn't he? Yeah. Who didn't look great. What's he going to do with him? Is he going to G him up behind the scenes? He's done it in the past with a player like David Santon at Inter. He's almost ruined him. He ended up at Newcastle, for God's sake. I know he's gone back to Italy now. But so it will be fascinating to see how Mourinho, in a season that he's expected to challenge for the Premier League title, how he deals with it when his players maybe don't perform exactly as he wants them to throughout the season.
He's not afraid to bomb a player out, is he?
No, we've
seen
not
it so many times. I think back to someone like Adje Delorno at Chelsea, where it didn't quite work for a season, just bang, out the door straight away.
Matter?
Well, look at the ways with Luke Shaw. Now, I don't know, Luke Shaw maybe not be covering himself in glory, but that's a player who was, you know, he's an expensive buy. He's got a lot of potential, still very, very young. And is it complete odds with the manager? Luke Shaw is saying, I've been training hard, I don't know what I've got to do to play.
And Mourinho is publicly saying he just doesn't think he's got the ability, and it's difficult for him to even justify a place on the bench.
He was saying that he doesn't... he was actually saying, I have to do a lot of his thinking for him, which is, I think, is a sort of English is my second language way of saying he can't follow my instructions properly. Mm. Which would be worrying if, given the amount of money he cost, and from an England point of view, for example, would be a little bit disappointing for his chances of really going on and achieving something with them.
Certainly. Does Spurs need their lucky charm Diego Maradona in the stands watching them?
Can never be a bad thing, can it?
No. It's good for all of us, isn't
did
it?
Did you
he's
see
had a lovely few days.
He's had a lovely time. Did you see him stumbling out that restaurant?
Yeah, in his weird, like, sort of military-style tracksuit. I don't think the military-issue tracksuit, but if they did, they'd look like that.
He had an army green... You know, not an all-in-one, actually. Sorry, no, it was a tracksuit.
It wasn't a onesie.
I wanted to say a onesie, but it wasn't a
onesie.
Say
a onesie. Camouflage onesie.
He had a twosie on. but he had a watch on each wrist.
He always
like a referee. Like a referee.
Yeah, he better not go near Italy. They'll have that off him.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Maybe that's what it is. Maybe he hides one. Oh, you're talking
it's
about
not. What? So one of them is always set to the time in Argentina. I don't know why he always wants that to hand, but that's the reason for it.
That's not actually true. One of them is so he knows if the ball's crossed the line or not.
I wanted to tell if it was handball or not.
I'm not telling you what the line's made of.
Hey, there it is. Yes, but Spurs away to Manchester United.
So why did you bring Maradona into this, by the way?
Because he's Spurs luck chum.
Oh, okay, right.
Because when he watched them play against Liverpool, it was a big 4-1 win.
It was. Mm-hmm.
Have you seen the picture of Diego meeting Hugo Lloris and Harry Kane?
Yeah.
Both of them just looked so bemused. It's brilliant.
He started telling Harry Kane to always shoot across the goalkeeper.
Yeah, he started.
Because people watch it on telly now.
Yeah, and I thought to myself,
hey, Kane, shoot across the goal. They had Ardiles translating, didn't they?
Oh, did he?
Yeah, Pochettino went, translate, Ozzy. Yeah.
I met Ozzy Ardiles. He's a lovely little fella. But I did find it funny how he was giving Kane tips to score goals, and I thought, he's doing all right at the moment, yeah, isn't he?
And, he'd have thought of that.
And last time, Diego, you were a coach. It was in the World Cup, and you couldn't get out of bed. Now you want a coach.
And then when you fancied having a little kick about, you had a cigar on.
Yeah.
I reckon he went up to Dele Alli, started talking to him about temperament as well.
Mm. And also, Pochettino showed himself to be an amazingly typical Argentinian.
Yeah.
Where, you know, this debate of who's the best player of all time, Maradona, Pele. And Pochettino just kept saying in that interview, he was the best player of all time. He's the best player of all time. That's why we want to have him here.
He's better than Pele. No one's mentioned Pele.
Yeah.
He looks like a sort of lovesick teenager when talking about Diego Maradona.
I think all Argentinians
I think they do, yeah.
Is it, like we say, it's something that we just can't relate to.
Indeed.
You know? Having the world's best player.
Well, having at any point in history the world's best player. You know.
Again, I'd hate to mention him twice in the week, but Brett Pittman's up there.
Brett Pittman.
Remind the listeners who that is.
I hear he's a man who has signed for Portsmouth, and people are saying, why has he been given the captaincy? He scored two goals, one with a broken nose.
Exactly.
And then he was off to a flyer.
Jim,
I do listen to the accent on the continent.
As an Arsenal fan, Jim doesn't have any idea what that even means. No. A player playing with a broken nose.
Yeah.
Is that even allowed?
Arsenal.
They all play with broken hearts.
Presumably someone has to sign that off, some sort of medical officer.
Yeah, this
is ridiculous and I don't believe it.
The doctor came on and just signed his nose. So that's fine. It's fine to be used.
Just put his initials, which happen to be DG. Is it time for correspondence with PT Donaldson?
No, it's not, because Spurs are 5-2 to win at Old Trafford this weekend. So £10 with Bet365 will return £35, including stake.
Ooh.
An interesting one. A tempter. Mm.
Spurs will be trying to win the game, so I think that's probably a good bet.
Yeah.
Is it time for correspondence with PT Donaldson? I think it is.
It is time for that with that.
Oh, you went a bit late night radio host there.
Yeah.
You forgot what show you're on again.
Nightcrawler.
Yeah.
I'm on late, everyone. I'm having a breakdown. Josh Paul. Josh Paul from Chattanooga.
Ooh, very nice.
In Tennessee.
I'm listening.
Was there a famous Chattanooga train? Is that the thing? Chattanooga
Choo Choo, yeah.
There you go. Boys, just wanted to. We're in our face. We just wanted to shoot you a note to get your take on what seems to be a budding controversy at Spurs. If you recall, last season was one of the consistent themes of genuine affection between Eric Dier and Dele Alli.
Oh,
one
yes.
of the most satisfying things. Yeah. However, this season, the focus of the affection for Dele seems to have been shifted to Son Heung-min.
Okay.
They've developed quite the handshake ritual, which one assumes was only learned through many hours of time together practicing, probably as Dier kept texting Dele, wondering when he would be able to play video games or something. And in Sunday's 4-1 drubbing of Liverpool, Son reached up and gave Dele a lovable little nose squeeze after Dele scored his goal. Which leads to my question, do you think this is the locker room controversy that will be Spurs undoing in the league this season? Will Dier's hurt feelings after being dumped by Dele for Son impact his play or unravel the seemingly solid locker room Pochettino? I'm doing a, what was his name? I can't remember his name now.
Garth Crooks
did the Pochettino. Pochettino has overseen at Spurs. Is there room for two first loves in the locker room for Dele?
I think it's just locker room chat, Pete.
Well, Dier wasn't on the field for the start of that match, was he?
Would you allow me to add some fuel to the fire
on
this?
Okay, cool.
I am currently scrolling through Eric Dier's Instagram.
Yep.
And it's been, let's have a look what date that one is. It's been, from my calculations, the last time he posted something on there with Dele Alli is April.
Oh,
Bennett. Something's clearly gone on there.
Is there terrible, trouble in paradise?
Terrible Valentine's Day for the two. Awful. By the sounds of things.
So he's got a picture here. He's thrown it in Dele Alli's face. There's a picture of here with him with Michel Vorm. There's one with him with another different coaches. There's one of him playing against Luka Modric. One of him having a laugh with a couple other Spurs players.
Are they both doing this to each other then? Just trying to show they've moved on?
I can't find Dele Alli's Instagram, so I'm not sure, but I'll report back.
He'll have one.
I think he might be on something there, because Dele Alli's people have been talking about his form at the start of the season, perhaps not being quite at that level he was at last season.
Distracted, clearly. Yeah.
What becomes of the broken-hearted, Dele Alli?
You see, Dele Alli can go into the physio room and say, I've got a knock, where is it? On my heart. How long will I be out for?
Who knows?
Possibly forever.
John. Hello, John. Hi, Ramble Boys. Again, appreciate Friday is not normally a highlight of the week time, but I have to think the Koeman appendix from Tuesday's show was one of the favourite things I've listened to all year. So,
is that why you're a bit self-congratulatory stuff, yeah?
Well, it was something that came in afterwards, and this kind of leads on to the next email from Jonathan. First-time emailer. I enjoy listening to the show while I'm on the road driving. With the risk of Luke telling me never to email the show again, I have a small suggestion for the show. Stop being horrible to
what's his name?
Emailers. I'm not telling you.
I don't want any
suggestions.
It's Jonathan.
Do you do a podcast? If you don't, why would I want your suggestions?
When Marcus states at the time of recording in relation to a news story in the making, can we state the actual time of the recording?
Good idea.
Yeah. I am an Everton fan and have just spent my car journey down the M6 to Pride Park, work-related, anxiously waiting for comical reasons for the breaking news to hit the studio and someone to interrupt the pod with, he's gone! As I am assuming you were recording the show yesterday and the news broke around lunchtime. Well, Jonathan, you clearly didn't hear the aforementioned Koeman appendix.
Some people don't listen all the way to the end.
Exactly.
They embarrass themselves on Twitter, don't they?
we even said in the synopsis of the show.
Yeah.
Yeah, you might want to listen all the way to the end. We couldn't do any more for our listeners.
No, we went back into the studio, into our hot box of a studio.
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
Any more for any more.
Are you going to tell him when we record, Marcus Speller?
No.
So why don't you... Yeah, what we should get Marcus to do is maybe do a photo of him holding
a day's
newspaper and a watch.
Yeah.
But on each wrist. Luke,
yeah.
Luke, do you have any thoughts on that piece of advice?
No. No.
Tell him to stop emailing him.
No.
In the studio, can we get like loads of clocks from like Tokyo to Australia?
Argentina,
yeah,
obviously.
Argentina, yeah. Uh-huh.
I've got a few pieces of the correspondence from the Facebook page if you want them.
All right, then.
Paddy Gundry says, I started a new job today and they've given me the locker number 10. Hashtag playmaker.
Nice. That
is good.
But he doesn't say what his job is.
Pleased with himself.
Yeah, he knows what his job is.
Do footballers' lockers correspond with their squad numbers?
Probably
they should.
Probably would, wouldn't they?
I'd hope so.
Part of the reason, apparently, Nicolas Anelka had a terrible time at Real Madrid is because they didn't prepare a locker for him. And he didn't feel very welcome when he turned up. They massively mucked up the preparation of him arriving.
That's a shame.
They don't really have lockers in modern locker rooms, do they? They're just kind of like open-ended, aren't they? They're just kind of...
Are there not lockers in the bottom?
Oh, maybe there are.
Yeah.
Though, for the boots.
Chris Williams says, I'm looking forward to this weekend. Big Wenger taking another managerial scout like some kind of elderly French Mohican. Possible. And I'll finish on this one from Michael Courtney. It's Halloween, so here's hoping the Edward Scissorhands costume makes an appearance again this year, Pete.
Yep.
We all discussed this before. I wanted to do Edward Trumpy hands. Edward Tiny hands.
Why don't you explain to the listeners how that would sort of manifest itself?
It would involve me using the same rather expensive premium Edward Scissorhands costume, but adding a Trump mask and two magnifying glasses on the hands to magnify Trump's tiny hands. And I do actually have tiny wee hands, so it kind of works.
Would it be Donald Tiny Hands?
Donald Tiny Hands,
I mean, does Edward Scissorhands need to be present at all in that?
No.
No.
Doesn't really, does he? But he has paid for the costume.
Yeah. Well, so quite, yeah. Sorry, I've been silly
into
there.
Into the hundreds, Jim.
Jimmy's already paid for the costume and Pete just doesn't throw money around frivolously.
No, he doesn't.
Very frugal man. Well, there we are. We're going to talk about Leicester City and Everton and the South Coast Derby after this.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
It's poor by you.
I deeply regret the comments I made.
Welcome back to the Football Ramble, everybody. Before we get to the South Coast Derby, Leicester City have appointed former Southampton manager Claude Puel as their new head coach. He's in the job. This one's happened before we recorded.
Mr. Muscle got his chance.
Yeah, Michael Appleton.
100% record. Two wins.
Yeah, two wins. That's good enough for the West Ham owners, but not good enough for the Leicester City owners, though.
I was speaking to a Southampton friend of mine, and yes, I do have them.
Southampton friend of mine.
Yeah, he supports Southampton, and he was saying that he thinks it's quite a good appointment for Leicester.
I agree. I think it was really sort of harshly done by, really. He finished eighth, got them to a cup final last season.
They were unlucky in that cup final.
Yeah, absolutely.
So
I asked
my friend, again, who supports Southampton.
My Southampton friend.
And he said part of the reason that he didn't do as well was two reasons. One, because the season tailed off after the cup final disappointment. And two, because our players are a bunch of self-entitled wankers. So
very happy to report that opinion on that.
Yeah. But the fans weren't that happy with Puel. A lot of the Southampton fans didn't care for him.
When we did quite a bit of radio around the time, there's a lot of stuff coming out of Southampton about how the players were disappointed, about how they didn't really like his training methods, how he was boring, and all the rest of it. But we'll see. But another point, my friends, he's called Steve. I should just name him. Mate Steve said is that Leicester have got quite a lot of dynamic, quick attacking players, and he said that Puel was crying out for that at Southampton. He didn't really have it. So he thinks at Leicester it might be a bit of a better fit. So I'm on record to say I'd like to see Michael Appleton given the nod. Really, he did everything that was asked of him. I think he's a good coach. He won both games he was in charge for.
Good football man.
He wants to stay on. He's a proper football man. Yeah. He wants to stay on. I think as assistant, doesn't he?
He does.
Puel,
assistant to the manager.
Yeah, quite. I think Puel though he's got a good record of overachieving with sort of mid-sized clubs, and that was the case in France as well. Leicester are the ultimate overachieving mid-sized club, obviously. So that's a difficult thing to live up to. But I think you can argue he actually did.
When did they overachieve?
You know exactly.
Are they even a mid-sized club?
But was the criticism of Shakespeare that he was really nice, but he wasn't very tactically good?
Yeah, he had a good relationship with the players, but lacked tactics and else.
Puel's the opposite to that, basically.
Yeah, I don't know what Puel's like as a man manager. I think you don't hear many reports that he's quite nasty or aloof with the players, but I doubt he would. That knowing the little that one does about Puel, I think that Craig Shakespeare certainly got alongside those players. And if you think about the players that with the spirit they had under Ranieri and all that kind of stuff, it was a very together squad. But those days are long gone now.
Yeah, quite. I think that's what needs to be sort of accepted and established, isn't it, in a sort of hierarchical sense. And I think Puel is obviously a very capable, safe pair of hands. But also, you know, he's clearly a good manager. I mean, he was a Champions League semi-finalist with Lyon. Yeah. But that is, you know, he's got some pedigree.
That long ago, do you know what I mean?
Strange situation at Southampton that just didn't work out for both parties. But I think it's a really good appointment.
Yeah, I mean, as you say, Southampton, he finished with them in the top half, which is, you know, realistically, without being disrespectful to Southampton, it's probably the best a club like that can hope for, unless they have an injection of cash or a particularly fruitful number of youth players or youth side coming through. But I think Puel, to me, with the Shakespeare situation and Puel coming in, it is just a classic case of a British manager and a non-British manager. You see the two worlds colliding. Shakespeare, when he took over from Ranieri, I think he won his first five or six games straight off the bat. The players liked him. He gave that a little bit of lease of life, and everyone suddenly thought, hey, this is really great fun playing with this guy, and here we go. But that has its limitations. We see that with our friend Alan Pardew as well, who takes over a club, and they do sort of quite well, and then their failings and shortcomings come to pass,
and it needs to be a bedrock of organisation, you're saying?
Well, do you know what I mean? But that seems to be the case, whereas a foreign manager like Puel, obviously, some foreign managers have a great rapport and a great management style. But compared to their British counterparts that come in, they may not be able to get alongside the likes of Jamie Vardy and so on, maybe language barriers or cultural barriers, whatever it may be. But clearly,
definitely the latter.
Yeah. But clearly has much more in his tactical locker than most of the British managers we've seen play the trade in the Premier League.
And you wonder with someone like Vardy, I've heard other players say, oh, you know, well, this foreign coach Muck. Came in. No, this foreign coach came in with the nutritionist and stuff, and I can think of one player in particular. He said, I was 30 at that point, and it had worked out. My life had worked out fine so far, so I didn't need to change my diet. Yeah. You can imagine Jamie Vardy's very like that.
What's wrong with
I'm not taking the Skittles.
Skittles and vodka. Yeah.
All right, I won't have the red ones.
I'm only giving up one of those things.
But they're playing Everton. It's two teams in flux, really, isn't it, at the moment?
It is, yeah. Well, former Leicester player Jerry Taggart, who's a wonderful chap, said Puel, he may not be a sexy fit, but he's pragmatic, and that'll suit Leicester. Mm. Who would be a sexy fit, Pardew?
I think Puel might have been a decent fit for Everton, to be honest.
Well, Unsworth's Everton. Come on. He wants the job.
Is he going to get it?
He's done an impressive job at the under-23s.
He has. They've won trophies.
And he actually, he played some of those youth team players against Chelsea, didn't he? Which looks like a bold sort of interview technique to me. It's like, this is what I can bring through.
Ex-academy coaches always do that.
We've just spent a load of money.
Ex-academy coaches always do that.
Oh, Tim Chair would do that, I suppose.
Yeah, I think he might have mentioned it once or twice. Yeah. You seem remarkably chipper, given that your bow's gone.
Yeah.
My bow.
Yeah. Are you in a bit of shock?
Has
it not hit you yet? He'll be back. Don't worry about that.
He'll be back.
Have we heard any talk of Erwin Koeman? What's happened with him?
He went.
He's done, is he? Yeah. Come on. Okay, right.
I think so.
Stuck with it. Blood is thicker than water. Blood is thicker than toffee.
See, Koeman said today that he had Olivier Giroud in the building, very nearly ready to sign for Everton, and he changed his mind, decided to stay in London, and he thinks that's what did for him.
One of the players said that they'd kept a number, was it the number 19 back for Diego Costa as well?
Right.
Everton?
Yeah. Wow.
That's a bit
over-familiar, isn't it?
My take on that whole situation was that Koeman spent the whole summer plotting and scheming just because he could.
In the Algarve.
And he didn't think about what he was actually doing.
Yeah.
That's essentially what's happened.
I think so. I think it's come back to... Well, it has come back to bite him on the bottom. But Unsworth really wants the job. They look quite good against Chelsea. I know Chelsea did rest one or two players and they've got one or two injuries, the likes of Kante. But it's funny how he thought, right, we're playing one of our number 10s. Rooney's up top. We're going to play Aaron Lennon back in the side with a bit of width, and Morales
as well
on the other side.
That's what they were crying out for.
He just looked so much better. Now, there may be one or two little niggly injuries and so on that helped shape that side, but they looked an awful lot better away to Chelsea, and actually will go away from that game very disappointed that they didn't.
Yeah.
Well, you can't draw in a... it goes to penalties, but they didn't push them all the way in a penalty shootout situation, or at least go through in the tie, because they could have done something. Mm.
I think it was interesting as well that Nias was involved in Calvert-Lewin's goal quite heavily. Just having a sort of battering rammy striker might suit them in the absence of what they couldn't get in.
Yeah.
Because Koeman said himself, like, losing Lukaku... Even if things weren't going well, they did have the option of just knocking it long up to him, and Giroud would have given them that as well. So
I did like that though.
I think they would have been a better team with Giroud in it.
Oh, of course, absolutely. Yeah. Well, yeah, but
they have. I mean, Koeman, in his defence for the mistakes he made, he did bring the ass back in from the cold.
Oh, quite.
He did
yeah.
play him. He just didn't score a huge amount.
It's not a criticism of Koeman. It's just an observation of how they might sort of turn things around going forward.
I did find it funny though, because Koeman said when you're struggling to play it out from the back, we didn't have the option of the long ball. So basically.
Well, yeah.
Oh,
well. And he also said the players didn't have any confidence. Well, that's your job as well.
Yeah, yeah.
What I would say is, like, when it comes to the January transfer window, like, people are just going to be hardballing Everton if they've got a striker on their books. So
it'd be like,
we know you've got money, and we know you bloody need a striker, and you will do anything for goals. So, like, it's you unless write
it's,
your own check.
Unless it's Hossaloo, in which case you'll be happy for the goal. Leicester are 11-10 to beat Everton this weekend. So £10 with Bet365 will return £19.09, including stake.
Yeah, well, Unsworth wants the job. Sean Dyche is the favourite to take the job. He said it was interesting what he said. He said he's flattered with the interest. At the time of recording, at 1 o'clock on Thursday, there is the Unsworth is still in charge. Sean Dyche's favourite to take the job. He said he was flattered with the interest, but will continue just getting on with his job and doing what he does until things change. And I thought, that's not going to instil a lot of confidence for the
strange
Burnley
little addendum, isn't it? Mm. Do you think Dyche would work at Everton? Because I think the problem at the moment is a lack of cohesion, which he's shown he can certainly instil. But, is it to the level that Everton would want? I would expect not.
There's always be question marks because, I mean, this is just speaking on behalf of myself, I suppose. I don't really know him as managing anyone else. I don't know who else he's managed off the top of my head. And secondly, the demands placed on a manager when they move from a club like Burnley to a club like Everton, I just think the role is different. You have a completely different role to fall. That's what people make comment about. Could Big Sam go to Man United? Could Sean Dyche go to Man City? The skill sets are completely different in my view.
Mm. I think the trouble, if you look at a country like Italy, where they really, really cherish nurturing coaches and the tactical evolution. That's why managers work their way up. That's why they earn the bigger jobs. Whereas in England, it's a bit of a tricky situation. Often you get managers who will encourage their players and man management and backs to the walls kind of stuff, get their way out of the championship. And then it's not backs to the walls, sorry, they'll get themselves out of the championship through whatever means. And then they'll get to the Premier League and it is a bit of a backs to the walls job. Sean Dyche, every win at Burnley is cherished.
Yeah.
Especially any point on the road is a good result. And Everton, slightly bigger club, that's not quite the case. And it's certainly not if you go further up the league. You know, you can't...
Marcus, if Burnley lose to anyone at the weekend, there won't be huge headlines about it.
No, of course.
Anyone.
Even if they lost at home to, say, you know, Huddersfield or whoever it may be that may go there who they'd perhaps expect to win. It's, oh, well, OK, dust yourselves down. It's different at a club like Everton and it's different when you go up higher. And the trouble for British managers is that tactical approach. You know, we're talking about Puel there being more tactically adept than, say, Craig Shakespeare. If you're not developing and evolving tactically, then you're not earning the chance to go to a bigger club. I mean, look, if you were Everton, why would you go for Sean Dyche when potentially, I don't know what the legalities would be about approaching, say, Marco Silva, but why wouldn't you go for someone like Marco Silva or even be really ambitious and go for Thomas Tuchel, who's looking for a job? Why wouldn't you do that?
Absolutely.
You know, and I'm afraid that's the problem. The only British manager that I can think off the top of my head that's currently playing his trade in the Prem, who you think, well, actually, what could he do at a slightly bigger
club? Roy the Boy?
It's not Roy the Boy. I feel he's had his chance.
On Merseyside as well.
Would be Eddie Howe. But the thing is, Eddie Howe, the whole club is shaped around Bournemouth. It didn't work when he went to Burnley. But not every manager's going to succeed everywhere he goes. That can be a bit of a misnomer.
What about Brendan Rodgers?
Well, he's doing fantastic job.
I think he'd be a good fit.
He'd be a breath of fresh air, wouldn't he?
Well,
to the city.
I can't think of a reason why they wouldn't.
Well, that's fair enough. I accept and enjoy the reference, Jim. But I genuinely do. I would genuinely like to see him there. I would like to see what he could do there.
Okay.
Yeah, there we go.
Would the fans accept him?
Anyway, Everton Leicester's part of that absolutely monumental. Leicester Everton monumental Super Sunday. I mean,
it is.
Strap yourself into the easy chair.
Indeed, yeah. Did you find it funny that Ryan Giggs said he'd be interested in the job, and Phil Neville said he might be keen? I thought to myself, lads, earn your stripes.
Well, it's not funny. Ryan Giggs has coached, and he has stepped in on a temporary basis at United.
Yeah,
and he's done his badges.
He's earned his stripes then.
And Phil Neville, move on.
Valencia.
Yeah, move on.
Blisteringly successful.
Keep moving. Yeah. Even when you feel like you've moved on enough, keep moving going, on. Phil.
Oh, dear. Oh, Dick Advocaat. You're talking about where Ronald Koeman's going to go. Dick Advocaat said that Ronald Koeman should succeed him as Netherlands boss.
Willie Advocaat, Pete. Remember him from Monday?
Delicious.
That makes sense, doesn't it? But would you be okay with Koeman being in international management, Marcus? You wouldn't hear from him as much.
Yeah.
Oh, I think that's okay. No, he'd have more time to tweet away.
He just spends some time apart.
It'll be fine. Him and Ruud Gullit. What could go wrong? There'll be complete harmony in that dressing room. Shall we move on to the South Coast Derby?
I'm confused by this.
Why? Why is that?
I don't understand the reference.
Okay. Well, Southampton have got a South Coast Derby in the form of Brighton.
They have got a South. I would agree with that.
Yeah. Okay. Right.
A South Coast Derby.
All up to speed.
Yeah.
Southampton, they've had a mixed season so far, currently 10th on 12 points. They're 4 points off relegation.
They're 4 points off a Champions League spot as well, Jim.
Oh, all to play for then.
So they're right in there, aren't they? we forgot to mention Bufal's great goal that he scored last week.
Beautiful.
An early contender for goal of the season. He did that. He went over to the manager and basically started shouting.
Yeah, it was really disappointing that, wasn't it? Because was Bufal their record signing at one point?
He came the summer before last.
Yeah, he had a bit of a reputation.
I've just got a bit of a bugbear with these sort of types of celebrations.
I agree.
And when players do that thing when they point to the name on the back, and the young lad for Arsenal,
Andy Nketiah,
when he scored the other night for Arsenal against Norwich, he ran over and sort of folded his arms, and at one point a substitute
and he
came
pushed
up
him away,
and he pushed him away, and I thought, come on.
To be fair though, he's 18 years old, he scored with his first touch on his full debut for a club like Arsenal. You want your moment, don't you?
You've got to celebrate with your pals.
Yeah,
man.
Moment is within a team context though.
Marcus, he's been highly talked about for a very long time, Eddie Nketiah. Everyone's talking about him.
Chelsea let him go at 14, figuring he was too small. But I just think, do they not know that he would grow?
You get a lot of footballing stories that start with, I was too small. It's like, Yeah, well, they, clubs
home,
know this.
Close to home, is it?
Clubs know this.
Speaking as a man who didn't grow from 14.
No, I know. I'm pretty much in my fighting weight that I was when
but
I was 14.
Peter, you and I are the only ones who have played competitive football of late.
Good point.
The two big boys
good
over
good
here.
Good point. No. Two big boys. Yeah. Big boys.
Big in one way more than the other.
The centre-back partnership that never was, Jim Cavill and Luke Ball.
The Bouffal guy, I don't want to get a lot of pelters for saying this.
The Bouffal guy.
That Bouffal guy.
Yeah.
The Bouffal team.
Yeah. He came from Lille, and I can't remember how much money he was, but I think he was doing that clearly. Players do that type of celebration because they want to be picked more, right?
Yeah, of course.
That goal...
Just score your goal, that's enough.
It was quite bad defending.
Joshua emailed in saying, I was very disappointed not to hear him mention Bouffal's goal versus West Brom. He slalomed through four defenders. Are you having a go at his slaloming?
No, I enjoyed the slaloming, but I just want to put it out there for the record. Two West Brom players ran into each other and fell over.
Well, I think those two, I swear those two West Brom players, it was nowadays Fenwick and Peter Reid. I swear it was them.
Yeah, exactly. but Brighton, I mean, they're playing Southampton at the weekend, aren't they? And
they'll be still purring, will they not, after their win against
West Ham. They really good. I know West Ham were poor, but they looked really good in that game.
Put them to the sword. I was looking at that Southampton side, decent spine in that team. Forster in goal, Van Dijk. If he stays around. Romeo's a very adept midfielder, Tadic as well, and Gabby Dean. They've got options up front. I know the options, you know, Charlie Austin wasn't in the side in the Carabao Cup, and I think he might be out for a bit. But you look at the side and you think, a lot of teams in that league wouldn't mind to have a few of those players in there.
Well, they're trying to get Van Dijk.
Yeah. Okay,
a lot of teams in the league are trying to get Van Dijk.
Do you think it might just be that things have got a little bit stale at Southampton? They sort of hit a wall hit a ceiling, really, of where their realistic expectations can come. So how do those players, you know, what are the motivations of those players? Are they just trying to repeat what they've already done? Because that's a hard thing to aim at, isn't it, with any sort of, you know, momentum.
If they were aiming to be the best team on the south coast of England, they've achieved that goal.
They have, profoundly.
Certainly. Leaving everyone in their dust.
You know what they say about success, though, Marcus?
What's that?
It's leased, it's never owned.
Is that right?
And you have to pay rent every damn day.
There's only one. There's only one.
And didn't Portsmouth learn that?
Yeah. They paid no rent.
And then paid it all at once with interest.
But Brighton, I mean, if I'm being slightly honest, I would prefer Brighton to win this. And they are 11-5 to beat Southampton with Bet365. So £10 that will return £32, including stake.
Yeah. That's disgraceful partisanship. I'm doing the bets next week.
Yeah,
Brighton said that they need the atmosphere in the ground to be like that of a cup final for every home game. And you can bet your bottom pound that it's going to be like that.
Yeah, well, it's been happening in every game so far, isn't it?
Great place to go. It's a real destination to go watch football. I like it down there.
Mm-hmm.
It's good.
There we are. Luke, what is our best bet with Bet365?
Well, we've got a new man in the hot seat. Step forward, Mr. Sean Williams, who emails with the following. Hello, chaps. I'm throwing my hat in the ring for one of the hottest seats in world football, the Bet365 Best Bet Hot Seat. I believe that I can muster up the knowledge to help donate money for a wonderful charity while also trying to claim the title of ORE. No one's done it yet, Sean. My bet of the week is down to an apparent derby on the south coast, between Brighton and Southampton. Both teams are coming off wins, however, the momentum is definitely with Brighton at the moment. My beloved Southampton are just scraping wins this season and can barely get the ball in the back of the net. However, it is a matter of time before things click with the new manager, and I believe that to be this weekend. So my bet is a draw in the first half and Southampton to win the second half. So draw Southampton in the half-time, full-time market at 9-2. 9-2 with Bet365 means our £50 will return £275 for Prostate Cancer UK should this one come to pass. And you must be over the age of 18 to gamble, and do gamble responsibly. And for more information on that, go to gambleaware.co.uk. So that's from Sean Williams. Thanks for that, Sean. Thanks for stepping up. And just to reiterate the bet, it needs to be a draw at half time and a Southampton win at full time for the bet to come in.
Nice one, Shawnee. I think, I like the cut of this guy's jib.
Cool. Mm. Oh, well, listen, we want someone to get a hat-trick in. It's never been done.
Yeah.
Never been done.
Never knowing.
So one before the season's out, I'd be happy
be
with.
Great,
it's looking hard.
It'd be great.
Well, we need to get Ryan Brewster on the go.
We do. Hat-trick specialist.
Indeed, yeah. Luke, should we look ahead to the weekend?
Yeah, I've got a couple of, because I got excited earlier and did a few of them when Pete was doing the emails.
That's fine.
Got a couple more to finish up with, because we're fairly short of time anyway. Peter Blow says, who cares about the Prem? We've got a World Cup final to watch.
There you go. Yeah,
thought you'd like that one.
Oh, Blowy.
And Taffy Woolback. I just like that name.
Yeah,
Taffy.
Oh, brilliant.
This is the type of guy Taffy may or may not be, basically. He's called Taffy, right?
Yeah.
I'm getting dressed up as a bumblebee for Halloween this weekend.
A big, presumably Welsh bumblebee.
One of your mates, Pete, presumably.
Yeah.
Do you know Taffy?
I don't know Taffy.
You will by Monday.
Yeah. Listen, Taffy, if you are going to get in touch, please do on Monday and send us in a picture of you as a bumblebee. And the Halloween part of your work sounds amazing.
Yeah.
Good.
Any more? Is that it?
That's it.
What can you... where do you go from Taffy and his bumblebee outfit? Yeah. Certainly not. Any more, gentlemen?
Short the Football Ramble if you want to get involved with the show and say hello.
There we are.
And we have shows every Monday, every Friday, and we have On the Constant, which is European football on Wednesday, so tune into that as well, and make sure you subscribe and download and tell all your pals.
Superb. Thank you very much for listening to the Football Ramble preview show sponsored by Bet365. It's been an absolute pleasure, everybody. Say goodbye, Luke.
Goodbye.
Bye, Jim.
Goodbye.
I'm ready to beat her.
Baba da booby.
Goodbye from me.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.